Today, the Alliance of Leadership Fellows is excited to continue a series of national conversations engaging leaders at the frontiers of social justice. Our program today engages the 2024 winner of the Lorraine Matusak Award for Courageous Leadership, Dr. Neeru Kumar. The Matusak Award is given every other year to recognize bold and courageous leadership in the face of social difficulty and injustice. Dr. Neeru is a pioneer in the field of diversity inclusion. As the founder of Ask Insights, a global DI consulting firm, her impact spans the US, UK, Middle East, and Asia. For her tireless dedication, she was honored with the Padma Shri Award in 2021. This is the highest civilian award in India given by the president. She has also been a national icon and advisory board member for the Election Commission of India. Our host today is Dr. Betty Overton, who served on the selection panel for this year's Matusak Award and also serves as a board member of the Alliance of Leadership Fellows. Betty has earned a PhD in Organizational Leadership and Higher Education from Vanderbilt University, an MA and BS in English from Tennessee State University. She is a frequent consultant on the issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. She has served as faculty in the Ethical and Creative Leadership Concentration in the Interdisciplinary PhD program at Union Institute and University. She has also taught at the University of Michigan in the Center for the Study of Higher and Post-Secondary Education, Spring Arbor University, the Salzburg Seminars, Western Michigan University, the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, and Fisk University. From 2013 to 2017, Betty served as director of the National Forum on Higher Education for the Public Good at the University of Michigan. Prior to joining the University of Michigan, she was the provost and vice president for academic affairs at Spring Arbor University. She spent 10 years as director of higher education programming at the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and a program officer in leadership. Betty will be your guide for the rest of this dialogue. Our program, which is called Talk That Walks, convenes frontline leaders at the critical place where thought becomes change. The leaders in today's dialogue inhabit the transition point where experience and insight take flight as impactful action. To learn more about the vision and mission of the Alliance, visit us on the web at allianceofleadershipfellows.org.
Hello, I'm Betty Overton, a board member of the Alliance of Leadership Fellows. And on behalf of the Alliance, I welcome you to this podcast. And I welcome our special guest, Dr. Neeru Kumar, the winner of the 2024 Lorraine Matusak Leadership Award, presented by the Alliance and officially given at the International Leadership Association's Global Conference this year in November in Chicago. Welcome, Dr. Kumar.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Betty.
Let me say just a word about our awardee. Dr. Neeru Kumar is widely known as a social activist in India. She started her career in 2012 with her work on gender empowerment and diversity. She worked as a senior officer in central government health programs in India for 25 years. And in 2020, she was chosen as one of the national icons of the Election Commission of India. Wow, what a career. Dr. Kumar, we are delighted to have you with us. I've mentioned a few things about you, but would you say briefly some of your personal and work background and accomplishments? You can certainly tell your story better than I can.
Thank you, Betty. So I must begin by saying so much gratitude for getting this award, for being part of this conference. I must say it's really a gift. I had no idea that somebody was nominating for me for this. I just woke up one morning and read this email as if it a gift has just dropped down into my lap. And you know, I've been looking at the emails of the Alliance for many years now, and I've been wanting to be part of the conferences, but it was so far away that I couldn't do it. So I think it's just a grand universal plan that this is happening. So I'm really, really grateful for that. About myself, you already said most of the things. The one thing I would say, which is relevant to this part of the conversation, is that I've been a fighter. I've been a fighter since I was born, I think. The only difference now is that I've tried to shift from being a fighter to a thoughtful inspirer and to a person who wants to make a change by challenging the status quo, but by not radically wanting to be angry or upset about things, where I used to be all the time in the mode of, this is not fair. So I've shifted a bit from there. The reason for that was that I'm a person with disability. I got polio when I was 3 years of age. And being a girl growing up in India with a disability in the 1960s and 70s was not at all easy. So it was a fight all the way. I don't think I would have reached here without the fight. So at that time, the fight was really important. But it's a blessing that I have been able to now convert that into wanting to take up a profession where I can do things for people, people with disabilities, women, people of different ethnicities, anybody who belongs to any kind of historically marginalized groups. So I've turned my greatest disadvantage into my biggest advantage. That's a little bit about me. So I'm a married person. I have 4 kids, 2 sons and twin daughters. So it's been a journey.
You're obviously leading a full, busy, busy life. It's amazing with 4 children and all that you are doing, also as much as you are doing in terms of advocacy on behalf of others. So I'm just so pleased that we're having the opportunity to interact with you in this way. So thank you for sharing that with us. I want to just say a little bit that you won the Alliance's Lorraine Mattoussi Courageous Leadership Award because of your work. And the award is named after a much beloved educator, philanthropist, and author who demonstrated courage in her own leadership. And then, not only in her own leadership, encouraged and supported that type of leadership in others. Dr. Mattoussi introduced this award to recognize and bring to the fore people who were indeed, as she called, stepping out, who were taking a risk to stand up for what is right and just, who work for the common good, who are willing to take an unpopular stand, even if doing so may jeopardize their jobs and cast them in an unpopular light, or even cause them to lose their friends. In light of the award and your work, let me ask you some questions and get your thoughts on courageous leadership. So first of all, I'd like to say, how do you define the value of courage in the leadership context? What does that mean for you?
So Betty, in my experience of the leaders I meet almost on a daily basis, some of them whom I've met and others when we've all read about, and I find that many of them were visionaries who thought and saw far ahead of times. But it's one thing to know and quite another to take a path which is yet unproven, uncharted, and even dangerous because it's not yet the norm. And there will be many who would be waiting to mentally or physically attack anyone who wants to break norms. Courage, on the other hand, by definition, is the ability to control your fear in dangerous or difficult situations. So to me, a courageous leader is one who knows or sees what others are not yet able to see and who has the ability to manage his or her fears. And then they need to create an entirely new strategy because it doesn't exist yet. They need to inspire people to make a team and then walk forward with a force, with a purpose and a passion that doesn't waver even for a second, no matter what the barriers or the blocks. That to me is courageous leadership.
Amen. I think Lorraine would love that definition and your response to that. So what is the connection you think between courage and integrity? So how do those two things kind of go together?
Yeah. Very much together, I would say. So again, by definition, integrity is about having strong moral codes or values, which will not change due to fear or personal interest. And it is about sometimes you see there's one single person on one side and there's a whole lot of people of power and privilege standing on the other side. And it can be very intimidating. Now, I see that a lot in my clients. I spoke about the marginalized groups. So people from the minority groups and the marginalized group, I see that a lot. But there is a difference. Some of them would find their voices and challenge and speak up. And again, some of them may speak up very radically or without the objective or knowing where they're going from there. But there are leaders among them. there are leaders who own their space, and when they speak up, their voice is heard. Mind you, they're also very uncertain about the end results because you never know how it's going to be received or what it might land up for them in terms of their jobs, their opportunities, so many other things, their image. But they know how to get their voice heard. They've learned it along the way. And they also have an end objective in mind. They know where they want to reach. Another ingredient that I find very important for integrity is to be able to look at everyone's point of view, even if it's people on the other side. So when there are people on the other side and you're saying something entirely different, do you have empathy for them? Are you listening to their voices? Are you understanding that they too are a set of their circumstances? And it might be their conditioning while they're growing up or so many other things that one has to keep in mind. When that happens, when that integrity happens, that you're able to look at a collective picture, I think things change. So that's about integrity. And it's also about being honest to your own work, and not eventually wavering off the path by saying, now it's more about myself. So the integrity to stay true to your purpose, I think that's also very important.
Very insightful, very insightful. What are some areas in your work and life where courage played a role? And now I guess I'm looking, where are the stories and the narratives that you tell about where this has really happened for you in terms of your life and work? I know it's been many places.
Yes. So it's going to be hard for me to choose which story to tell you. I'll begin with a story, a personal story when I was very young, when I was just out of medical school, because I'm a doctor and I practiced clinical medicine for very long. So what happened way back then was that I was on the third floor, posted in the nursery where newborn babies are kept. And then there was the labor room right next to the nursery. We were on the third floor and a fire broke out. And that fire was so bad that there was smog and smoke all over the stairs, and it was very hard for people to move. There were lots and lots of people there. People actually started jumping out of the windows and the ventilators from the third floor or climbing down pipes. They broke bones and they got injured seriously, some of them. And now listen to this. Mothers left their babies and fled. These were people from very low socioeconomic groups. And yeah, some of them had many babies. So there maybe that played a part. And I was left and another doctor friend was left. All nurses, all other doctors, mothers, everybody gone. And we've got about 20 babies lying there in cradles. And we have no access to go down the stairs or take the elevator. And there was no way we were going. There was no way we were even going to try and go. Because at that time, the most important thing for us was to save those babies. And then we made, you know, there were sheets, bed sheets. We made cradles out of those bed sheets. We put the babies there. And then we put them, and we tied the sheets together. And then we put them down the ventilators. And then there was one escape. Somebody called out to us and said, would you come down this escape? We said, we're not coming without the babies. And then we took all 22 of those babies out. There was one woman left who had eclampsia, and we tried to, she wouldn't budge. We cajoled her and cajoled her and cajoled her, and she wouldn't budge. By then the fire brigade came and then they pulled her out. But by then the babies were all down. Now, it was not easy for me to climb down because of my mobility issue. It was not easy for me to climb down the ladder from the third floor to the ground floor on the fire brigade ladder. But I think the fulfillment of having saved those lives at that moment, that carried me through and I came down.
What an inspiring story. What gave you the... You know, at the time that you were thinking about that and doing that and jumping into that, you know, in the moment, what was in your mind? What were you thinking most about?
You know, Betty, at that moment, the focus is so strong that you're thinking of nothing Nothing else, only the lives of those babies. My friend who was with me is still my friend, and we relate this in all family gatherings. Our children have heard it 100 times, but there's something we still feel a sense of togetherness in what we did at that time, because we were thinking of nothing else except the lives of those babies.
Interesting, which is a really nice segue into my next question. So that focused thinking is one of the things I'm hearing. But what strategies have you learned for working to overcome and manage your doubts and fear? That's I knew that was coming. So when you were telling that story.
Yes. So when I talk about my doubts and fears, can I relate another story which is now related?
Absolutely. Please do.
Yes. So when I began work in India, in the space of diversity, equity, and inclusion, there was absolutely nobody doing it before me. And it was a very fearful space to enter. Also, I had a very stable, respectable government job, which I gave up, moved away from, not because I was unhappy there, but because I was passionate about this field, which was yet uncharted, unproven. Nobody knew about it. I didn't know if I'm going to be able to make a living out of it, but I just took a leap of faith and took the jump, never to look back. But there were many moments there which were very challenging. When I would travel down, especially to small cities and remote areas, the mindset to manage over there was really difficult. People would be angry. When we would talk about gender issues and women being in the workplace, they would say, why are you toppling the entire family systems? And I'm talking about 16 years back. Why are you toppling the entire family systems? Women are good taking care of kids, and maybe it's their choice, and maybe they want to be there. Maybe you're forcing them. We're not stopping them. There are no biases. So they would fight about this like you know about that, yeah? And they would really fight about that. But to be able to stand your ground among those people, being a woman and standing your ground over there, a sea of men, and you're standing there as a lone woman, and you're speaking about this, and you're supposed to carry them through a whole day of a workshop, and then go out of there, that needed a lot of courage, and there were a lot of, and people would bang tables like that. I mean, that was scary.
Oh, yes.
Yes. The other thing that was scary in the workplace is when I entered the global arena. So I was fortunate always to have a lot of global friends who are in this space. And we're a close-knit global community. But when I started doing sessions globally, when some of my friends and colleagues, they invited me, it was not necessarily well received because there was a huge India bias. And when I went in, I had to prove myself twice and thrice as hard as the others. Then this was just when COVID began. I got into a Zoom session with one of the workshops and with one of my colleagues from another organization who had invited me for this. These were leaders from a reputed organization. And I had to operate Polev. Now, technically, none of us were that sound at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to do, and it just won't work. The Polev just won't work. And these leaders, they were like really upset. And they said, you know what? I think we should leave. It was very embarrassing, Betty. I felt so vulnerable because in my own country, by then I had established myself. People knew about me. I got the respect. And suddenly over there, I was like a newcomer, a vulnerable young person trying to prove. And I felt it was miserable, to say the least. And when the session ended, the owner of the company, the managing director of the company, which was the global company, she came to me and said, you know, this wasn't good. And how's this going to work in the future? And I said to her, I said, I know this glitch happened, but I want us to try just once more. If this ever happens again, I will gracefully step back myself. It's important for me to be part of the global world. So do you think it's okay if I do that once more? And she said, it's okay. So, but that was again, very, very, I had to be very humble. Yeah.
But fearless too, and moving forward with it. Yes.
Moving forward for that.
Yes.
So I would say a way of managing the fears and the strategies for managing that fear is again, your sense of purpose. When your sense of purpose is so strong that you want to know everything about this work and you want to make a difference to people, not in small pockets, but globally, everywhere, then you're willing to put a risk and take those small risks of putting yourself out there, even though you know you may be judged, even though you maybe know there may be biases. So it's that strong sense of purpose that carries you through that. Mm-hmm. The one other strategy I would say is listening to people deeply.
Yes.
When you listen to people deeply, listen to their lived experience, listen to their stories, it becomes part of your strategy. And when you go step into, say, a workshop with leaders who want to say that in my organization, there are no biases, be very fair people, then it is these voices that I take back as data to them because I have listened to these people. These are my two strategies.
Great strategies. Thank you for sharing them with us. I have two final questions, and I'm going to try and combine them too, okay? So how do we inspire courageous leadership in others? And relatedly, and how do we work with those who we see may not be working and acting courageously? So could you talk a little bit about how do you bring people and help them and with this kind of courageous approach?
Yeah. The easiest way for me to answer that, Betty, is to give a typical structure of my workshop. Because when you walk into a workshop, there are going to be people, three sets of people, people who are already strong sponsors, people who are sitting on the fence, and then there are people who are absolutely on the other side. Like you said, who are not yet that inspired. What do you do? So what I do is I begin the sessions by listening to them. And for that, I create a psychologically safe space, a very respectful space, because deeply from my heart, I do feel respectful towards all these three groups. Mm-hmm. And then I tell them that this is absolute confidentiality and psychologically safe space. So, and this session will come alive only when we have your stories. It's going to be magical. I tell them it's going to be magical. I promise you, it's going to be magical. If you really bring out what's inside you, we'll experience something which is really different. So I listen, and then I listen to them. And I listen, give them the respect. And then I empathize in a totally non-judgmental way because they're coming from some deep beliefs, which is not something that they have purposely inculcated in them. And then you come to the second part, where I show them what a valuable part they are of the system, which may be the organization, it may be the country, or it may be all of humanity. Then I show them that if they play a part for the larger good, it's going to benefit them as well. And it's going to give a deep sense of purpose and fulfillment. So by then, I think there's a lot of emotions flowing. That's a lot of energy flowing into the room then. Yeah. Then I give them information. If they don't know that yet, what's the current reality? What are some of the tools they can use to actually make that difference? And finally, I end with my own story. And my own story of the entire struggles that I have gone through, where I am now, what are the struggles that I'm still going through? I become absolutely, completely vulnerable by then. I have never recorded my story on any talk or podcast such as this one. Mm-hmm. I don't tell my whole story because I save it for that moment. Because throughout the day, there has been a process in place. Now, when I tell the story, all the themes, whether it is of psychological safety or allyship or diversity of thought or respect or belonging, all that we have discussed during the day, when I tell my story, that seals it. And therefore, I never tell that story outside the room. I can tell it every day inside a room full of people because I'm not a motivational speaker. I am an expert in the field who wants to bring that change. And this process works so fabulously, Betty, that I tell organizations in one day, just in one day, I will make sure it's my responsibility to make champions out of these people so that whatever initiatives and policies in the DEI space you plan here onwards, these will be your champions. And then I meet them sometimes 7 years, 8 years later, sometimes in airplanes, sometimes in the airports. And they tell me, you know, that session, that one day has stayed with me till now.
That's great. So inspiring. I you know, I was jotting down sort of the sense of safety and information tools, which we always talk about a lot, inspiration, and then that your own vulnerability. What an inspiration that is, must be for people as they are going into this work or having to rethink sometimes those deeply held convictions that they have. So those things are indeed at the core, I believe, with you, of how we help people as we try to act ourselves courageously and then inspire others. Wow. What an inspiration that is. Thank you. We are delighted to have you with us for this podcast. This has been wonderful. How do people find out more about your work and how might they contact you if they're wanting to learn more?
Yes. So I'm on LinkedIn. Anybody can get in touch with me on LinkedIn, Dr. Neeru Kumar. And we have a website, askinsights.com. Any of these two places, I'm easily available, and I'd be so happy to interact with anyone who wants to.
Very good. Thank you. And I hope that the people who watch this podcast will be really inspired to get out there and get to know you and your work much better. For those wanting to learn more about the Alliance of Leadership Fellows, please go to our website where you can also find information about the work of the Alliance, how you can join in. We would certainly welcome your involvement. Thank you, Dr. Kumar, for being with us. And we thank you, those who joined the podcast. And we still want to say to you, we are so proud that you are our awardee for the Lorraine Lattusi Courageous Leadership Award. And certainly this conversation, I know, has shown people why you probably received that award. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Betty. It has been an absolute delight to talk to you. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. All right.
On behalf of the Alliance, thank you for joining us today for this important conversation. It's our hope that sharing these ideas will open new pathways to effective action supporting the fragile world we share. You can find us on the web at allianceofleadershipfellows.org. Goodbye for now and have a great day.